up. I spent about 6 months staring at a computer screen doing right-of-way easements and realized that if I had to do that for the rest of my life, I don't think I could have. So our local state senator was retiring and I decided to run for the state senate, got elected in 2012. First session was 2013. Thought there were some problems at the state party, so I ended up running for the state party chairmanship, trying to solve some of that, and did that for 3 years. I think I did okay. And we then, when Senator Kramer decided to jump into the Senate race, I decided to run for the U.S. House of Representatives, and I've been doing that ever since. My wife is from Oslo, Norway. She speaks 5 languages well and has 2 law degrees, and so I am definitely not the smartest person in my family. She just became a citizen end of last summer. She had her green card, obviously, since when she got married, so Norway wouldn't allow dual citizenship. So she wasn't willing to give up her Norwegian citizenship. And once Norway changed their law for situations where you're married overseas, then she can become a dual citizen, which I completely understand, because if the world would have worked differently and I would have moved to Norway instead, I would have never given up my U.S. citizenship. So that was fun. This election will be the first time she gets to vote, so every time I go home, I get threatened with that. Juan tends to get mowed pretty quickly, and we deal with all of those things. I have a 14-year-old daughter. I have a 12-year-old son. Last January, we moved from Dickinson to Bismarck, which I'm still not super excited about, but I'm 8 minutes from the airport instead of 100 miles with the time change. So it saves me about 55 nights a year at home. And I, like I said, I have 2 kids that still like me, so it's nice to be home with that. One of the reasons I bring that up is because I think the last 3 years have been really, really tough on everybody, and for a lot of different reasons. But I had 2 kids in 4 different school systems transferring during the middle of middle school in the middle of COVID. And I will just tell you, outside of all of the national stuff and everything going on, from dealing with 2 school districts in Dickinson and two school systems in Bismarck, there are a whole lot of people that didn't have a playbook for how to do any of this and that worked really hard to try and get through it. And I mean, I'd like to come back to life as my son, and we get a call from a teacher saying, hey, he is 0 for his last 36 assignments as we were doing some of the remote learning. Well, he had done them all. One of his parents, who wasn't my wife, had put everything in an outbox instead of actually sent it. And so trying to deal with it, I mean, and I just say, so I think far too often we talk about these things from highly conceptual levels, but we were dealing with it as parents, right? We had kids, we had computers, we had, you know, they were doing pickup lunch for kids who couldn't eat when they were doing it at home, and struggled through a lot of the same things everybody else did. I was supposed to spend the night last night out here, and instead drove back and forth because my son had his first baseball game. So still try and do that. We're running on our small town tour. We did this when we ran. I did this a lot when I was a lawyer. When you work for a guy in Grand Forks, turns out he does all the Grand Forks stuff. You do the Walsh County stuff, the Hillsboro stuff, because the boss doesn't have to put miles on his car. And then when I moved back to Dickinson, there was a lot of competition for legal work in the city of Dickinson. Less so in Hettinger and Richardson and Taylor and Beach and Watford City at that time, because the oil boom hadn't hit yet and all of that. So what I have found that, and this is no offense to Fargo, Grand Forks, Bismarck, Dickinson, Williston, Minot, it's not, but they have more full-time operations at the city level. They're bigger communities. We get a lot of communication with our offices, both in North Dakota and DC, about those issues. And just to be honest, as a guy who loves to hunt, anything, if it's got feathers, if it's got fur, if I can use a shotgun, rifle, muzzle loader, bow and arrow. Less bow and arrow, I don't have time anymore, which is part of it, but I tend to feel like when you get out and do these things in communities like this that don't necessarily have a full-time city administrator / lawyer / lobbyist / all of that, that we can come out and find out what's going on and try and talk to people. And there's a lot of things going on. There's a lot of struggles. We have a lot of different things, but we'll go to the ADM thing in Spiritwood today, and that's a really cool thing if you're from Dickinson. Because it's taking soybeans from the eastern part of the state, and it's a partnership between ADM and Marathon Petroleum, and we have a small biodiesel refinery where we just to be honest, the 99.9% of it gets sold to California. So it's value-added ag for guys in the Red River Valley, but it's also jobs and producing something as we continue to move through in Dickinson in North Dakota. And I think that's important because I think a lot of times, and we see it, we saw it in the legislature a lot, I think more often than not, the East versus West thing is not nearly as pronounced as people think it is. Sometimes when you have acute funding needs and doing some of those things, you have to make some of those decisions. But I think more often than not, you're dealing with different size of communities, different needs. I mean, what Fargo needs and what Carrington needs, I mean, are different, and how we interact with a lot of those different issues. You're talking about rural development and economic development. We dealt with a lot of these things in the legislature. I mean, and you can see it with redistricting. We grew by, what, 135,000 people in 10 years? And our middle of the state districts are getting much larger. So as much growth as we've had in the eastern part of the state and the western part of the state, we still have real structural issues we have to try and resolve and continue to move forward for towns like Carrington. Town. We were in Oaks yesterday. And a lot of it comes down to water, and a lot of it comes down to gas. And as a state that has various different issues with water, from one end of the spectrum to the other, those are always issues we can deal with. But with the energy resources that we have and that we have available in the state, we have to continue to work through a lot of those different issues. And so I'm here, and I'm excited, and I would much rather talk about whatever you all want to talk about. I can't do anything about solving an 18-month drought in 48 hours. I know that's a problem. I serve on the Energy and Commerce Committee. I started in Congress on the Judiciary and the Oversight Committee. I also serve on the Select Committee on the Climate Crisis. I didn't name it, but I am on it. I try and explain to people very often what you guys call climate disasters. We call Tuesday in North Dakota. We will be one of the few places in the world where you'll have a blizzard in the western part of the state and a tornado in the eastern part of the state. And that's just not necessarily a normal April day, but it's not like everybody woke up in the morning and said, I can't believe this is happening either. We have been through this before. We have done a lot of those things. North Dakota's seen a lot of prosperity in the last decade. We've seen a lot of challenges, and one of our biggest challenges, and I think quite frankly our biggest one, is Washington DC and the meddling and what goes on out here. Far too many people out there think food comes from the grocery store, gas comes from the gas pump, and electricity comes from the light socket. And a whole lot of people that don't produce any, oh, you're late, you got to tell us your most embarrassing moment.
You're late here.
Far too many people who don't produce any of those things want to determine how they're produced. And I very often will say, well, I wish you could just say thank you. We're pretty good at it. We're pretty good at feeding and fuel the world. It was one of those lines when I first started campaigning. It must have caught on because I see some of my friends stealing it when they're on the campaign trail. So that's always nice to know. But it's happened, and it's happening a lot. And if you believe, as I do, and I think the data supports this, that about 75% of all the inflationary pressures that are existing for every family, everybody right now, are energy based. And a really bad national energy policy, a really bad worldwide energy policy. I'll talk about that for a second, and then I promise I will open it up for questions. 2010, a documentary comes out on HBO about hydraulic fracturing. Some of our best allies in the world. At the same time, they're decommissioning nuclear plants. Germany's a good example. Decommissioning coal plants, doing this. Ban hydraulic fracked gas from being imported into their countries. This is before we talk about the local politics and the national politics of climate and all of the electric vehicles, which ask questions about it. I spend way more time than I would like talking about it. But and a lot of that, and then what, and so twofold happened. One, Germany thought they were going to power their entire economy with offshore wind. They weren't. They had decommissioned their nuclear, they had decommissioned their coal. That left them one viable option for natural gas. That was Russia. Say whatever you want about people who criticize the United States. The German government knows we're never going to roll tanks into Hamburg. So you're starting to see a worldwide conversation that is pretty acute about a realistic idea. But I have a lot of Republican colleagues in DC that'll say flip the switch on American energy. There is no switch to flip. This is a 30-year problem that we have to build the infrastructure of. You can onboard a liquefied natural gas in Spain, but you can't get it to where it needs to go because France wouldn't let them have a pipeline. We don't have the tanker capacity worldwide to deliver some of the. That's before you talk about people in New York not allowing a pipeline to come through to get to the port. But so we're having real conversations with people all over the world right now about how we do this. And now we have to bring that conversation to what I would say are some more unreasonable coalition portions of the Democratic Party. And I think it's important to recognize not all Democrats are absolute are crazy on these issues. They're just not. But there are far too many in the Democratic coalition that think the pain at the pump is the point. It's a feature, not a bug. And they want to drive up the cost of carbon molecules because they want things that don't compete on their own on the marketplace to deal with. And that's before you talk about the fact that it takes 35 minutes for an electric car to warm up in January in North Dakota. It's before you talk about you've got all these pickup truck commercials in the Super Bowl with these electric vehicles, but nobody will tell you what the torque is or how long that thing will last if you're pulling a horse trailer, 200 miles. We don't have those conversations. We don't talk about what that looks like with government-run monopolies and duopolies, which almost every state utility is. They all have different rules. Who makes money selling this? If you put $1 million fast charging station in the Senex, and the Senex can't make money on selling the electricity, why would they put it in? So we have to have real on-the-ground conversations about what this looks like, because I think two things are true. The world's going to drive more electric cars in 10 years than they do right now. And if you live in Washington, D.C. and you drive 100 miles a month and you can plug it in your garage, that makes perfect sense. We drive 100 miles for groceries. It doesn't make sense. We have viable weather. We have all of those things. So we're also going to need the products we produce here. You're going to see a lot of this happen in the agriculture sector. We're dealing with two conflating things right now. One, 12.5% of the world's calories come from the area in the Ukraine that's under invasion right now. There is no way to get those products out of the Ukraine without the Odessa port. They cannot use the Odessa port right now. The rail infrastructure, none of that exists outside of the war, which is still raging and going on. We have 80%. We think we have a monopoly on sunflowers. We do really well at sunflowers. 80% of the world's sunflower oil comes from this region. 35% of the world's wheat. We are going in. Those pressures don't just exist in that area. They exist in Northern Africa. They exist in the Northern Triangle countries, which have direct problems with our southern border. And it's the 21st century, and if things work out slightly problematically, which I think everybody understands they could, the world could run out of wheat in September. And we have late planting, and we have rain, and we have cover crop programs, and we need to get more calories in the ground, but we need to make sure every farmer is being able to take advantage of these different programs. So we're seeing real confluence of things that come to pass that North Dakota is a part of the solution. And we need to continue to do that. And that's what I try and do in D.C. I don't try, for far too often, I think flyover states in general, like, please don't hurt me anymore, right? Just let us live their life. I try to explain to people in D.C. why what we do in North Dakota is important to them. Not why what, I mean, we know it's important to us. We have our lifestyle, we have the ways we do things. But we legitimately are a huge reason. We're a huge reason for three things. Why the United States is the only country that is both food and energy secure. And we're a huge reason why the world has lowered carbon emissions since 2017. Hydraulically fracked of natural gas has lowered carbon emissions. This is something that we can never get the DC media to talk about. Production agriculture and the efficiencies in agriculture and the onshore shale gas plays have lowered world carbon emissions. We're the only country in the world that lowered our carbon emissions after we left the 2017 Paris Climate Accord. We can shut down every oil well in North Dakota, we can shut down every coal plant in North Dakota, we can shut down every wheat field in North Dakota, and the world is still going to produce more carbon than one. China's putting the equivalent of one coal plant on a month, and they're our strategic adversary. So I think it's important when we talk about the politics of climate change, there's two things to remember. One good, one, or both of them I think are functionally problematic. One, it's not about saving the earth, it's about winning elections, and it's about outsourcing our guilt. And what I mean by that is if you shut it down here, you get a $10,000 rebate for your Tesla, and go to a cocktail party in Manhattan and talk about how you're helping save the world while China's putting a new coal plant up. Or go downstream from a lithium mine in Malaysia and drink out of the river, because I'm not gonna do it. So a lot of it is about outsourcing our guilt to other places, because if we don't see it, then we don't know what's going on. The other thing that is really important to remember about this debate, and everybody hates when you begin and end in politics, but you have to. If you are under the age of 30, it doesn't matter if you're going, if you're a senior in high school in Carrington or you're a senior in high school in Detroit, 85% of the people under the age of 30 rate climate change as a 1, 2, or 3 issue with high intensity. That means they care about it, it means they vote on it, and it means we have to recognize that. My solution to that, from representing a state that does this stuff really well, is 1, tell the story we've already done, and 2, steer clear of any regulatory regime that makes it harder to plan a thing. If 5 water pumps in a combine, not because 1 didn't work. If 5 now because of federal regulation. And I think it's very fair to say, anybody who's involved in the ag industry will tell you that every time the government says, we want to work with you to lower your carbon emissions, they mean we're going to regulate you, it's going to cost you more money, and we're going to force you to do it. So technology neutral, innovation, moving forward, and doing this. And then recognizing this, when they figure out a different way to store energy other than a lithium battery, that'll be the next economic shift. That'll be like the microchip, it'll be like the combustion engine. The point is, they don't know when that's going to happen, and under current storage technology, this stuff does not work to power our economy. There are not enough renewable projects coming online in the United States to deal with the growth in energy consumption, to let alone replace nuclear or coal or natural gas or oil. And those are real, real things that exist. You're not going to feed the world from a rooftop garden in the Bronx. We're going to feed it from eastern North Dakota and the Red River Valley. And we're going to be, so the benefit of some of these things, if there is one, is people are starting to recognize how important the things we do here are to their bottom line when they're sitting in a 3-bedroom apartment in a suburb of New Jersey, in New Jersey. Because everything we do here ends up on their kitchen table, or ends up turning their lights on. And outside of all of the other issues that continue to go on, those things go on. And then I just want to point out, we do have some positive things going. We're bringing natural gas to the eastern part of the state. Took a little longer than we would like, but we're getting it. ADM's coming online with a soy crushing plant. They're talking about another one in Castleton. We have a lot of these value-added ag things that are going to benefit the entire state of North Dakota. So those are kind of the big ticket items that we, that are constantly dealing with. And then we have politics, and we have all of the other issues. So at that point, I think we should ask you all what you want to talk about. That's high level, and I don't know how high level. Yes, sir.
You had brought up a little bit about natural gas. I just recently become aware that Harvey, North Dakota is not serviced by natural gas. And I'm wondering how many other communities in the state are in this same predicament?
Too many. And MDU, and some of this, and this is one of the things. So we've had, I'm on Energy and Commerce with the Democratic-controlled House of Representatives. So we've had 23 different hearings on their bill called the Clean Future. You know what? None of our hearings talk about permitting reform and litigation reform. And that's one of the functional things that we have to figure out how to do. And we should have some, you would think in any policy based in realism this would come, because it doesn't matter if you're trying to bring a high voltage transmission line from a wind farm or a natural gas pipeline from the oil field. If you can't deal with permitting reform and litigation reform, it's become so cost prohibitive just in the time alone it takes to get the permitting and dealing with this. Keystone XL is a very interesting example of how that worked, right?
Maybe this is more of a state issue than a federal level.
And check and talk about some of this too, and these fights have existed. They were going on before I got in the legislature, but 2013 is when they ramped up.
Well, all this is related. If you heard Kelly talk from the very beginning, he talked about the legislature, and he meant Bismarck.
Yes.
Because he knows he can get a lot more done in Bismarck when he was a state senator than he can in Washington because of the current environment. So his struggle, it is a struggle to get the alliance and the coalitions for him to go. As an example, and then I'll get to your answer because it's all related.